This is the Startup CEO, a podcast for the innovators, the problem solvers, and the leaders of the next generation of business, giving you insights on how to be a successful startup CEO with your hosts, Jeff Graham and Luke Fox.
Hello, and welcome to the second in a series of four podcasts about how to be a successful startup CEO. I'm Luke Fox, the founder and CEO of White Fox, a global leader in drone security. Our speaker today is a personal mentor of mine who has helped many CEOs achieve successful companies. I am honored to introduce Jeff Graham. Jeff has been a CEO himself in four different Silicon Valley startups over the past 20 years. Before that, Jeff was a senior executive in four publicly traded computer companies. Today, we're talking about personal leadership and people management in the second of our podcasts on how to be a successful startup CEO. Can we start by you telling me a little bit about what makes a good leader, Jeff?
Well, hi, Luke. Well, there's a lot been written about this. I'd say there are some common leadership characteristics. For example, basic determination and persistence, ambition, self-confidence and assertiveness, and energy. And I'd add personality or charisma and articulateness. Notice I didn't list intelligence, knowledge, and ability in that set, but obviously these certainly help too. And I think a solid track record of success means more opportunities come your way. And finally, probably the one that most people, successful people, will cite is you need luck. So let's not forget Lady Luck here. I think most successful people would say that. Most of the things here, though, are either core to your personality or they're not. But there are things you can do to become a more successful leader, a better leader. As you know, Luke, I believe trust is a very important part of leadership. Trust starts with being honest and open, and then ensuring all interactions have mutual respect. In addition, I think leaders must always recruit the best and smartest people. They must focus on the future, not the past. Remember, you can only change the future. Then they should focus and prioritize everything they do. And finally, they must be optimistic and see problems as opportunities. Then basically, people will follow you if they believe in you and trust you and think that they will learn and grow and they will succeed because you succeed and you'll succeed together.
Wow. And as you mentioned, a lot of those are personalities, but there's some key things there that anyone can and should do to be a leader in their lives and in their companies. What are some other things that really can make someone a strong leader?
Well, let's focus on the trust issue. So trust is a result, remember, not a behavior. So the question is, what's the behavior you have to model? What I do is I openly state my values. Mine are honesty and truthfulness and open two-way communications. I share things like the company information with all employees, even what some might consider controversial things, like how much cash we have, how many shares we have. I try to be personal, and I demonstrate interest in people. I work on building a good team and creating good teamwork. I stress it's about we, not me. Good teams win together. You have to be authentic. You have to be compassionate. You have to be kind. I try to find opportunities to show that. I live by the mantra, treat people the same way you expect to be treated yourself. You have to do what you say. You have to walk the talk. Your behavior and your responses always have to be consistent. And as a CEO, you've got to be a predictable experience.
And as you talk about trust, we know that that is so critical to the success of being a CEO and therefore the success of the startup. Do you have any memorable quotes about trust that we can take away?
I do, yeah. Two really good quotes that I think are worth remembering, and these are fairly recent political ones. But George Shultz, of course, remember, I think died last year, the former secretary, U.S. Secretary of State, said, "Trust is the coin of the realm. When trust is in the room, anything is possible. When it is not, nothing gets done." And the other one I like is Wolfgang Ischinger. He was the former ambassador to the U.S. and the U.K. at different times. And he said the three most important things in effective international cooperation are truth, trust, and transparency. I think they're pretty good, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I could see that plastered on my wall. Well, when we go from those quotes that really establish how critical trust is when leading a startup and building a successful company, I'm curious, while we are all at work to earn the trust of our teammates, are there practical exercises one might do to help themselves become truly a better leader?
Yeah, I think a very useful exercise, for instance, is to do the following. Think of which leader or leaders you like and respect. I throw the word respect in because it's the respect that will motivate you to want to study them. And then identify their characteristics that makes you want to follow them. What is it about them that you like? And then match those characteristics against your own strengths and weaknesses. And think of ways in which you can improve your identified weaknesses. Look for coaches and be willing to be coached. That's how we improve. I think that's a very important point. Be willing to be coached, because that's how we do improve. And it's the basis of all professional sports is coaching. The last thing I'd say about personal leadership is you should be able to write down some bullets that describe your style of leadership. Mine, for example, again, are honesty and integrity, openness, transparency, consistency. But you want to be able to do that. The important thing to remember is that your fundamental job as a CEO is to motivate, inspire, and lead every day. Your passion will be contagious, and your team will emulate that passion when they see it.
It's so true that I know for myself and my team, the team can emulate the best of their CEO, their leader, whether it's the passion, the goals, the motivation, these values that you state. I've also seen how companies can take on the less desirable characteristics of their leaders. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how to best manage it?
Well, I think it starts with ensuring that your people know who you are, your experience, what shaped you in your experiences, your skills, your strengths, and your weaknesses, and your values, of course. You should describe these things openly to the employees. A good test, if you've been successful, is can the employees describe what's important to you and can they restate your values? I also think it's very important to understand your people. Simple things I'd recommend about that are always be approachable, open and honest and friendly, and ask yourself what you know about your employees. For example, where were they born? What did their parents do for a living? What's their education background? What are their hobbies? What's the names of their spouse or partner, and perhaps the names of their kids? And what are the jobs do they do? What job does the partner do? And most importantly, what are their life aspirations? Personalities also affect how you manage them. For example, extroverts express their opinions quickly and openly, where introverts need more time to put their thoughts together. So you have to allow for that as you interact with people. If you don't know these things, I would argue you don't really know your people. So test yourself on how much you know about the people who work for you, then fill in the gaps that you can't answer. And you'll feel more comfortable, I think, and you'll know more about them as a result. As a CEO, you don't have to do that for all employees, but certainly all of your immediate reports and probably the next level down too. The other thing I'd say is in this multicultural environment, you should also practice remembering people's names and how to pronounce them. Remember, you're doing all of this to help you understand your people and how to motivate them. You can get to know them when you solicit feedback, of course, on your leadership styles and what are their thoughts on the company. Most employees welcome being asked how they think the company and it can improve, or at least being given the opportunity to tell you what they think.
So much advice packed in there. When you think about the weakness that you have as a leader, is that something that you really share that? And how would you share that with your team?
Well, I do, yes, because if I share my weakness, it helps them understand me better. It's all about aiding that understanding that improves the communication. Let me try and give you an example of my weaknesses, for instance. I've been told in the past that I'm sometimes my openness or my forthrightness can be too blunt. I'm from north of England, and they say in that area, you know, people call a spade a bloody shovel and can be very, very forthright. And that my style sometimes can be off-putting because some people think it may make them feel like they should just do exactly what I say. Now, I know that. And I tell the people, look, I will express myself strongly and directly, but don't take that as an order. If you disagree, I expect you to tell me and share your opinion. Never say to me, I disagree, but I didn't want to tell you. I'll say, I'm always open. I'm always here to hear your thoughts. Incidentally, we may not always agree on things, but we have to ensure that everybody knows and supports the plan when we leave the room. I know some people might think I'm over-optimistic, and this might be a weakness. But personally, I prefer to be naively optimistic rather than negatively pessimistic. So I tell my people, look, I am an optimist, and I may be wrong occasionally. The trick here is to share the weakness so that people understand you, and it helps you understand them, and it builds the trust that we're after.
You clearly feel very strongly about creating trust, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I mean, all relationships are based on trust. It's worth remembering that trust, of course, its goal in life is to reduce risk, but it has risk in just sharing things. People fear being open sometimes. But if you start as the CEO being open, you help build that, and they reduce their fear and their fear of risk. I'm a theory Y manager. That means I'm open, and I inherently trust the person. I trust the employee. I believe people are grade A till proven otherwise, not F. As you know, I also describe myself as a soccer coach type of manager. By that, I mean I focus on building a winning team, ensuring that I have the right players with the right skill sets and a commitment to win. I tend to focus on real-time coaching, and this is where my directness actually is a strength. So I focus on real-time coaching, and I try to build a collaborative attitude within the team and produce great teamwork, ensuring that we have disciplined execution, i.e. the processes are in place and a solid strategy is in place, and we all widely understand the plan that we're trying to pursue. But remembering, again, coaching feedback should only have one goal, and that is to improve the individual's performance. Incidentally, one good book I would recommend on this topic was written about 40 years ago by Blanchard and Johnson. It's called The 1 Minute Manager. It's still in print. It's a very short, small book, but it has some great advice. I'd recommend it's worth reading quickly by anybody that wants to be a coach. In my startups, I always also do postmortems at the end of each quarter, just as we would after a soccer game. We make sure we fix the things that weren't working, and we're looking for continual improvement. We analyze the competition of their strengths and what they were again versus us. And we make sure we celebrate the achievements and we make sure we have some fun.
That's awesome. And so while we're celebrating these achievements, and that seems like it's very clearly highly motivating, what do you think about properly aligning incentives with the team beyond those celebrations of achievements?
Well, interesting thing in a startup is things can get loosey-goosey. And one thing that often gets overlooked in startups is basically a compensation management system. And I'm not talking buying an application. I'm talking about just reviewing people's salaries on a regular basis. One should never lose sight of the fact that pay and benefits are right at the bottom of Maslow's famous hierarchy of needs. So these have to be fixed, and they have to be fixed before anything else. You need a company-wide pay grade structure with a periodic system review process. Remember, always, your best people are being targeted all the time. And so you need to be sure that they are ranked, that they are rewarded, and they're paid appropriately. You need to have a process to do that on a periodic basis, and also look at their relative stock options as well, because it's very easy to think, we granted when you joined us, and then 5 years later, there's been no more stock options. I like to think of doing new stock option awards about every couple of years.
And so when we have the team that's in place, they're properly compensated, they're properly motivated, how do we ensure that when we add people new to the team, that they can be effective day one?
Well, basically, we're talking about hiring here. So once you've proven your value proposition, you will be scaling the size of the team and hiring a lot of people in the company. And you have to build processes to do that. It's time-consuming and expensive is hiring. First, the thing I think that's worth remembering is it's very difficult to hire more than 20% of your headcount in a given quarter. And I'm not talking about when you've got two or three people here. I'm talking about, say, 40 people, for example. You will find it hard to hire more than 8 people in a quarter. That's just a fact. In the early stage of startups, of course, you hire friends and friends of friends. These hires are usually very successful and they integrate quickly. And it's always good to have your employees incentivized to recommend their friends and get a reward when they do that. But once you move past hiring friends and friends of friends, you need to build a hiring machine. Hiring has to have goals. How many people are you going to hire this quarter by department? You need to define the job specs, the required skills, and the experience that you're going after. It's also a good idea to define target employees you want to recruit from and bring in in-house recruiters. I found in-house recruiters can be very cost-effective to use, but particularly when you're scaling the company and hiring, you know, about 20% of your headcount every quarter. I use at least three people typically to do interviews in each visit of the interviewee in each visit and limit that up to 2 hours max that they're in the premise. For more senior people, you might add a few more to the interview group and expand it to 3 hours. References are good and must be called, but backdoor references are always the best. And by the way, I do all the reference calls myself. I don't delegate that to a recruiter to do. Hiring is basically a very inefficient process. It's worth remembering, too, that the reality of hiring is if you hire five people, typically over time, one will exceed your expectations, three will meet your expectations, and one will fall below your expectations. That means 20% of your new hires you'll need to let go once you realize they are below performance expectations, and you realize also, of course, that it's non-rectifiable. Later on, you need to build a process that helps you identify and remove this bottom 20%. Sounds tough, I know. But again, if you don't do that, then your high performers will leave you because they lose faith in you recognizing what high performance is about.
Knowing then how critical it is to bring the right people on to begin with, and how expensive and time-consuming and inefficient the process of hiring is, do you have any simple suggestions on how to get the best results and interview effectively?
Yeah, again, starts with respect, so you treat every candidate with respect. Tell them who they will be meeting and what the roles of the people are that they're meeting. Stick to the time allocated. Be there on time to greet them when they come in the door. Remember, in the first interview, you have to sell the company too. A lot of people think it's the interviewer's got to sell you. It's a dual selling aspect here. Ask open-ended questions. Get them to describe themselves, their strengths, their weaknesses. Ask them what they like to do and what they don't like doing. Only hire people you like. It's a very instant and straightforward test to ask yourself that question. And hire people you'd like to spend more time with, because you're going to spend a lot of time with them. Thank them for their interest in the company and get back to them quickly. Finally, get the interviewers together after the candidates leave and compare notes. Hearing all perspectives on the candidate will also help you get on the same page as to the profile of the ideal candidate you're looking for, because it comes out quickly when you have those first interviews. For a new position, see a range of candidates early on, as this lets you identify and prioritize the most important skills that you're actually looking for in the new role. Let me make a quick comment on firing people too. It's always a hard thing to do. Worrying about it is the hardest part. Doing it, quite honestly, is the relatively easy part. However, it's a good thing that you worry about it. You should find it stressful, quite honestly. That shows that you have a heart and you're empathetic, which you should always be. However, the moment you know someone needs to go, I advise doing it ASAP. Poor performers, and more importantly, rotten apples, destroy organizations. No one appreciates you being tough more than your top performers.
Wow. There's just been so much information that you've shared with us, so much wisdom. And unfortunately, our time has come to an end. It always goes by so fast. I've really enjoyed this conversation. And, you know, as I look back at my notes on some of the things that I've taken away and will be sure to review, a couple things really stand out to me. One is that you mentioned about building trust and how essential that is in all business relationships. And then next to that, it's important to be a leader that's open, that's honest with the team and everyone you work with, and to focus all of our actions and efforts in a way that prioritizes what needs to be done. And then letting your people know who you are and getting to know who your people are. And then in that, learning to be a good coach to those people. I also heard you talk about remembering to put systematic salary reviews and incentive programs into place to really understand how we're supporting our team and encouraging that success. And finally, in our final moments together, got a lot of really good ideas on how to recruit and interview, and ultimately how to move people along who aren't necessarily working out. All of this is just so extremely helpful, and I'm so excited to hear what we're talking about next, because this is things that, as a CEO, we deal with every single day. So I so much appreciate your time, Jeff, and your wisdom.
Thank you, Luke. You're very welcome.
And to everyone out there that's listening, I hope you can join us next time on How to Be a Successful Startup CEO.